It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night. It is Thursday. It is my final show for the week. I am on my way to the bachelor party of my best friend. I am the best man. Going to be out in somewhere in New York, not telling you where. I've planned the Beer Olympics. I've bought the cigars. The shopping list is just about done. The pizza and wing place has been found. I am ready. I'm going to enjoy a three-day work week, a rarity for me, a rarity for most people, and I'll be back on Monday. So we've got a great show to end out my work week and take you up until 7 o'clock. Red Sox baseball comes up tonight, 7:25. It is the Sox and Astros, the pregame show. Drew Pomeranz looks to continue to try to right the ship. The lefty has, well, he's been mostly off, but a little bit on in his time since coming back off the disabled list. But a couple starts ago, six starts ago or so. So he's on the mound against Lance McCullers. We've got that game for you again, 6:25. Plenty to talk about today. We'll talk about why Monday is a huge day for the Red Sox. An inspirational local story at 6:20 you won't want to miss. Some more thoughts on Joe Kelly, the NFL. But first, I need your advice. 802-655-6672. Get in on the Town Fair Tire text line. Get in on the Town Fair Tire text line. So, as you know, we've all here at the station got really into Orange Theory Fitness. And Orange Theory Fitness is right on Shelburne Road. It's in Burlington. Your first class is always free. So if you haven't tried it out, go and sign up for that first class and work out with us. Rich goes, Arnie goes, I go, and went today. And now I like working out. And I play a lot of basketball and play baseball. I enjoy working out. The one thing I don't know, and I'll ask the people at Orange Theory Fitness this too, because they'll know. But I need your help too if you know, so I don't feel like a total idiot before I go asking them questions. I ate peanut butter toast before the workout today. Don't ever work out on an empty stomach, and peanut butter, good for you. What do I eat? What should I be having after the workout? Once the workout is done, you're supposed to eat within an hour. Take in nutrients. Refuel the body. We've just broken it down for an hour. Now refuel it. What should I be having? I know you people are out there with your giant boxes of protein, your giant cylinders of protein. I know you people are out there with your shakes. I know people are out there. My brother, who's a fitness freak, he told me, you know, peanut butter, if it's organic peanut butter with whole wheat bread or grain bread or something like that, that sounds like too much work for me. Who's got the remedy? What should I be eating or drinking that's attainable after the workout at Orange Theory Fitness? Because it was great. I had been two times this week, had an absolute blast, and this was my first week doing it. So now I'm all in. I'm all in on the OTF train. But I need to know what I should be eating or drinking to recuperate. So you workout people out there that are further along than me, then I want to know. 802-655-6672. If you've got the suggestions, then please tell me. You'll also want to get in on this, and this is where we start today. We were talking about this in the huddle, and I decided to make it the lead of Champlain Valley Game Night as well. I won't speak for lacrosse. I won't speak for tennis. I won't speak for track, softball. I'm only going to speak for baseball at the moment because it's what I know. Why can't, as it's been suggested, why can't Vermont and Northern New York high schools move baseball to be a fall sport? It on the surface, it makes sense. It is not realistic, though. On the surface, though, the thought is, well, you'll play in better weather if you start playing when school starts in September and you play through all of September, and then you start playing into October and you get the championships done by Halloween. If you could do that, then I think that's where people say, let's make baseball a fall sport. Here is why it's not realistic. And I've thought a lot about this at the high school level. It's not realistic for two reasons. And the number one biggest reason is that you are going to – there's not enough numbers for all the sports, okay? We've already seen a major reduction in football, and a lot of schools are already are starting to merge programs, lose programs, talk about playing 7-on-7, 8-on-8, 9-on-9. I mean, there's other ideas here to try to keep football going, but the numbers are falling. If you put baseball in the fall and keep football in the fall, you're going to decimate numbers in both sports, because I bet you at a lot of schools, especially smaller schools, where you have dual sport athletes and dual sport athletes, if you play one sport, chances are you're playing more than one, especially at the smaller schools. Now you're going to force them to choose, and you're going to hurt both sports. The baseball participation is going to go down because some of those kids are going to choose football. The football participation is going to go down because some of those kids are going to choose baseball. That is not a winning formula for anybody. And, well, maybe the good weather is conducive to playing baseball in the fall. Logistically, it makes zero sense, and that is the biggest reason. The other biggest reason is I would worry about player safety. And what I mean by that is this. As the current setup is constructed, high school baseball players start practice in March. And at least we did in New York. It was about March 20th. Maybe March 15th if you were talking about varsity. So let's just use that as a baseline. You go through from March. Most of these guys have done throwing in the offseason. They've done pitching lessons. They've done team workouts. They've done winter camps. Then you come into practice and you take 3.5 weeks, if you're a pitcher especially, to build up your pitch count. And you do it safely under the watchful eye of your high school coach. And then you play your high school season, and your arm continues to build up, and it's good, and you try to win a state championship. And then summer ball starts, and by the time summer ball starts, you're cooking, you're cruising. And you have been built up properly over the course of the last few months playing high school baseball to the point where when summer ball comes, you are safely in it. If it was reversed and summer ball was getting you ready for high school ball, and summer ball was first and then high school came in the fall, it'd be a disaster. Summer ball coaches do not always have the player's best interest in heart. They're looking for just what does the team need to do to win. And by God, if you're going to come out the first time and throw 85 pitches when you're not ready to do that, then so be it. That's how some summer coaches operate. Summer baseball is great in a lot of ways, and it's not great in a lot of other ways. And if you put kids into a situation where they have not been properly built up, and you're going to use summer ball as a way to build them up for high school, you're going to get a lot of kids, get a lot of pitchers getting injured and getting mistreated in summer ball. I've done it. Now, I was 21 or so at the time, maybe 22. I remember going into my senior year of baseball. In college, you play baseball in the fall. Mainly it's just practice and a couple scrimmages. But I pitched, I want to say, 40 innings in college all spring. And then in the summer, I came out and threw another 80. Now, I should have backed off in the summer, but I let the summer coach take advantage of my desire to pitch and my like for the game that by the time I got back to school in the fall, my arm was so tired and shot, I was hitting 74 miles an hour. Now, I never threw hard, but I should have been throwing 82 or so. I was throwing 74, and if I let that happen to me at 21 years old, as a college player, as a grown man at that point who can make my own decisions, what's a 14-year-old who's looking to make the freshman team going to say? What's a 16-year-old what is that guy going to say? When the college coaches come and scout you because they're looking to take, looking to see if they can use you on their roster in the future, and you want to impress them, and your arm's only conditioned to throw two innings at that point, but you want to throw five because you want to impress a coach, what is that kid going to say? What is that parent who's in that position going to say? That would be a disaster. So I won't speak for the other sports. It is a nice idea. It doesn't work at the high school level. However, I'll say this too. At the college level, I think it's something that needs to be explored. It's something that needs to be explored, and here is the reason why. You don't have hardly any two-sport athletes, so if you move baseball to the fall, you are not competing with other, you're not competing with roster sizes at your school already. That just wouldn't happen. You don't see very many two-sport athletes that are looking to play in the spring and the fall. The college baseball season that requires 40 game, you know, or 40 game Division III. If you look at Castleton, Linden, those places, it's a 40 game schedule that you're trying to lump in about 60 days. And then when you throw in bad weather, especially up here, it becomes, you only end up playing 30 games, and it becomes, in, you know, it just doesn't work. So if you could bring the kids back in, bring the kids back when they bring back football players and soccer players, bring them back in early August, mid-August, get them ready between August 10th and September 1st, and then just go and play September through October, and then make sure that the championships are in a warm weather place. You know, play them in Georgia, play them in Virginia. Then I think that would work. At the Division III level, I think it would work. At the Division II level, I don't know that it works because you got to play 65 games. You got to get those amount of games in. But at the Division III level, I think it's a very, very viable option. If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. Since I won't be here tomorrow, I'm bringing this up now. And we got a lot of talk on this during the huddle when we mentioned it briefly. Monday is a huge day for the Red Sox. Monday is day one of the Major League Baseball draft, and Monday is where the Red Sox can start to right some of the wrongs and fix some of the ills that, let's see, I'll get back to it. What dual sport students present a problem? I'm just saying that if you are playing in high school, when kids play football and baseball, they would be competing against each other, and they'd be, if one chooses baseball, they'd hurt the football roster and vice versa. In college, you don't have that very often. So if you move baseball to the fall, you're not ruining the football team, which is what would happen in high school. Unnamed Texter says, any other state in your assessment is right on, but in Vermont, especially Chittenden County, football numbers are way down. That's the point, right? That's the point, that if you put football, or if you put baseball in the same season as football, the kids that play both sports are going to have to choose, and those numbers are going to reduce even further, and that would be hugely detrimental to football in this state. Chris, the Mets fan, Brady, my thought is, why can't high school ball in the Northeast play deeper into the summer or in the fall? Well, I just told you why the fall. Florida schools start in January. That's because of the weather. Why can't they play deeper in the summer? I think that comes to the school, number one. Mike, this is a guess, and maybe we can, you know what, I will do my best to get somebody on this on next week. That I'm out tomorrow, but I will do my best to get somebody on next week on this. My guess is that it is because you cannot have the staffing, the high school community, the employees of the school. Once summer hits, they're done, or they're at least on different hours. They get their vacations. You can't ask them to staff into July. Then you'd start talking about the players that have graduated. Well, now, what about the liability for the school? What about if a kid who's no longer going to the school gets injured? I'd have to ask that question to an administrator. We know a couple of administrators. We'll try to get them on. Anyways, back to Monday. Monday is the Major League draft. It's a huge day for the Red Sox. It's where they can start to right some of the wrongs and fix some of the ills in this organization, and those ills are very, very real. When you start talking about the lack of a farm system and what that prohibits the Red Sox from doing, it's a massive problem. I mean, Buster Olney, our ESPN MLB insider, he told us that yesterday in the huddle.
No. Look, they're already over the luxury tax threshold. At some point, they're going to have to get a hold of it, which is why, look, if you're a Red Sox fan, enjoy 2018. Enjoy 2019, because there's no question that up ahead there's a cliff. Oh. And between the issues with the farm system and some of the financial concerns, potential free agency for guys like Mookie Betts down the road, we don't know what the Red Sox are going to look like in 2020, 2021. It is going to be really difficult. They're going to have to make some really tough financial decisions, and they're also going to have to start rebuilding that farm system.
I've been telling you that for months. that the Red Sox farm system is a problem. They made a series of moves to win now, acquiring Tyler Thornburg, acquiring Chris Sale, making other moves that were made to win now, even acquiring Craig Kimbrell when they did that a few years ago. That's all well and good if you go and win. But here's what's going to happen. You can't keep the band together forever. Chris Sale, Craig Kimbrell, they might not be able to re-sign when it's their time. Mookie Betts, big deal. Xander Bogaerts, big deal. Hanley Ramirez, you had a big deal for. This team is strapped for cash. Guys are going to have to leave. You're going to need to replace them. Who is going to be there to replace them? You could start on Monday night in hitting home runs in your draft. Finding multiple players. This team did a good job with Andrew Benintendi. They did a good job internationally signing guys like Rafael Devers. They need another young core that can come up, because when you can't keep everybody, you need replacements. You need reinforcements. The draft is now the first step in being able to do just that. Look at how teams that are sustainably good, the Cubs, the Astros, look at how they've done it. Yes, they tanked. They got good draft picks. They hit well in the draft. They also hit well in international signings, and the Red Sox need to start doing that again. As of now, if guys want to leave in free agency, they have no capable replacements. That's a major problem. Number two, they can't go out and acquire major talent at the deadline for two reasons. One, they can't take on the money, and two, they don't have the prospects to give up. Why didn't the Red Sox go after a Justin Verlander next year, who they're going to see, or last year rather, at the deadline, who they're going to see this weekend? Well, the reason why, again, couldn't take on the money, and they didn't have multiple top 100 prospects like the Astros did. That's why the Astros could make that deal. Look at the Yankees. The Yankees can do almost anything they want. Now, you can argue about the Sonny Gray deal last year backfiring on the Yankees, but they had the prospects to give up, and they didn't even have to touch Clint Frazier, Gleyber Torres, Justice Sheffield, Tristan McKenzie. They didn't have to touch any of them. Andujar. They had such a deep farm system, they could go out and acquire a young, controllable pitcher like Sonny Gray, who they thought would make an impact, for giving up nothing that was going to cripple their farm system. The Red Sox have nothing in their farm system. So people can poo-poo the baseball draft and say, oh, not that big a deal. Oh, they're all between 2 and 5 years away. So be it, but you have nothing there. And having a farm system affords you a lot of luxuries. Replacements for when guys leave, affordable replacements for when guys leave, and you don't end up in the money situation they're in now. And it allows you to go out and make deals. Buster Olney has told us all season, when it comes time, the Yankees are tenfold in a better position than the Red Sox to make deals. Monday is the start of the MLB draft. They need a couple of homers. They need a couple of knock-it-out-of-the-park picks. And you know what? Jason Groom was their top-rated prospect. He just went under the knife for Tommy John surgery. He's been hurt last year. He's been a bust so far. Now, he's 19 years old, so I feel bad saying that. But that was supposed to be a guy who could anchor your farm system, and he has been nothing. And that's been a problem, and the Red Sox need to address it. Monday is the time to start doing that. If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. We had a bunch of texts in the huddle on the draft. I mean, let's see here. Peter, he came out and said to us, Brady, I totally agree with you. That is what, you know, this is a huge deal. Drafts are important. Patrick, Brady, spot on with the MLB draft. It's huge for both the short term for the minor league teams and long term for the future of the major league teams, especially when you are having young players who are the ones fans are gravitating towards. Yes. And locally, you should care, too, because these are going to be a lot of the Vermont Lake Monsters that we're all going to see all summer and become kind of entrenched with. Monday's going to be a fun day. And if you are a diehard baseball fan, if you say you're a Red Sox fan, you should be all in on wondering what they did. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. When we come back, a local story you are not going to want to miss. A local broadcaster who is making a major splash in sports broadcasting, a local high school student making a major splash in sports broadcasting, doing it without the ability to see. How does he do it? We'll hear his story next. It's 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back to Champlain Valley Game Night on a Thursday right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You know, this is a special day for us because you guys know this. You listen to the huddle, and every day on the huddle at 5:59 and 40 seconds, Arnie goes, "Brady, do we have any interns today? Thank you." And then I have to complete the process. And the answer on Thursdays for the last 4 months or so has been Intern Alec. So Intern Alec is with us. And Intern Alec, it is his last day. He's done a great job for the last 4 months. He's a senior in high school at BFA St. Albans. He's done a lot in broadcasting. Some of you guys have probably heard him on as the host of The Mixdown, which he does. He's also been the voice of BFA
Comet Bob White.
Yeah, of Comet and Bob White hockey. He's done some basketball also. And the reason why, you know, we've never interviewed an intern before, Alec, and at least since I've been here. And we're interviewing you because we've never had an intern with a story like you. You are nearly completely blind, right?
I have light perception.
Okay, so you can tell if it's light and dark, but other than that, you are blind. And
it's all dark.
It is an amazing story because to be in this business and to have done the things that you have done, they're really, really hard when you have full use of all your facilities in every way. For you to have accomplished what you have done has been inspirational for me, and I wanted to share that story with the listeners. So let me kind of start with this. Sports to me is my favorite thing in the world. You take out family and best friends and all that, sports is my favorite thing in the world. I love playing it. I love going to it. I love watching it. I love immersing myself in it. And because of, you know, because of the circumstances that you are in, you aren't able to feel a lot of those things that I have felt, but yet you still love sports. What is the connection that you feel to sports?
Connection I feel to sports, especially in the, and I'm sure you can relate to this, if you've done sports broadcasts. I know Rich definitely relates, and I'm sure the other guys. I love the crowd. I love being up there in the crowd and just calling the action of what's going on and giving the fan, the listeners and viewers something at home to listen to, especially for the blind community. There's a lot of people in the blind community that I've talked to that are like, "I don't like sports." And so I ask them why they don't like sports. They say, "Well, there's no commentary." So for me, sports for me is a way to understand, not only understand the sport itself better, but to get more of a perspective of what is going on during a game.
Now, you have done, and this is amazing to me, one of the first things you told me when we were talking about this internship is you told me, "I've done play-by-play, some a little bit, and I've done a lot of color commentary for BFA Athletics." And my first thought was, simply how? As someone who cannot see the action in front of you, how are you able to call the action and then relate that to the listener or to the viewer? You got a pretty amazing system. So I'm going to start with this. If you like, you do a lot of hockey.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to ask the layman's term question that our listener might be wondering. How do you know where the puck is? How do you know who's shooting it? How do you know who's on what side?
I'm going to say, you know, it's pretty straightforward. You don't know where the puck is.
Yeah.
You know, it could be one end of the rink, and the next second it could be at the other end of the rink. I've worked with a lot of our girls to understand what hockey is, first of all. That's the main thing when going into this business, is to understand the sport. When learning where the puck is and who's shooting on what side, at the beginning of every game that I've done, I've always asked a person who's sitting with me, who is on the right, what net is on the right side, what net is on the left side. And they'll say, okay, BFA is on the right side, BFA's net's on the right side, and let's say Spalding's net is on the left side. So then I know, okay, BFA's going to be shooting to the left, Spalding's going to be shooting to the right, and vice versa vice versa for the periods.
And it's a lot of stat memorization for you also, because you know, if I'm doing the play-by-play and I say, okay, they're coming up and down the right side boards, and there's a little bit of an opening there, you know when to come in.
Yeah. Yeah, and you got to really cue into what the person is saying, you got to really cue into what the play-by-play person is saying. So like you just said, if there's an opening, really pay attention to the openings of what the play-by-play person is saying, and it has to go with that play-by-play. So for example, if you say something like, number four, the BFA Comets, Molly Marshall going down the ranks, and she's got the puck, she's got the breakaway. Then I could say something along the lines of, Molly Marshall had a, or you know, I could say something along the lines of, Marshall had a game goal, had the game winner in the last game with a record of 14 goals on the season so far. She is a very great player, and she grew up playing hockey and skating on the pond since she was 2 years old, that little thing.
Alec Wolf with us here. He's been our intern for this semester of school, and it's an inspirational story as he is nearly completely blind and is able to really immerse himself not only in sports but in sports broadcasting. And Alec, as I said at the top, this is a hard business. There's a lot of buttons, a lot of controls, a lot of lights, a lot of things to know what to slide up and slide down and phone calls to take. It's hard.
I'm lost already.
It's hard to follow at times. Have you ever doubted your ability to be in this business? Have other people doubted it?
When I stepped into my first time ever stepping into a radio station, it was 2 years, 3 years. Yeah, 2 years ago, I stepped into a radio station for a job shadow. And the DJ was explaining the board to me, and I said, no, thank you. And I walked out of the station, and I said, no, thank you. I don't want – that was the moment that I was just like, okay, I don't want to be in this business anymore. And I wasn't even getting into the business just yet. I was just, you know, dipping my toes and seeing what I could do. When somebody showed me the board, I was really lost.
Arnie's lost when I show him the board, so don't worry about
wow,
that.
Wow, I'm not surprised. So this past summer I had an experience. I got the experience to work in a radio station and run my own radio show for 2 hours every Thursday. So that was my moment where I realized that this is possible. I can do this. They let me mark the board up with some tactile markers, and they, after showing me 2 hours worth of training, which was long, but it was worth it, showing me, okay, what fader does what and what, you know, all that stuff. And I just kind of wrote some notes down, and now it just comes natural. And I just walk in here, and I'm like, oh, this does this. You know that.
You come in here every week, every Thursday, and you're how old now?
19.
19, okay. So you come in here every week, and you bring in just the world's greatest-looking technological advances. You've got just about everything you could have. And what I wonder is, would what you're trying to do have been possible for a blind person 20 years ago, 30 years ago? I mean, how much has technology just allowed you to get into this business? And I can only imagine it's only going to keep getting better and better for people in the future.
Well, you and I were talking about this last week, and I told you what I'm going to tell you now. Technology is just phenomenal. 20 years ago, and Rich said this, 20 years ago, you have, with the radio business, 20 years ago, you had tape decks, you had the 8-track players, the CD players. With what we have now, it wouldn't have been possible 20 years ago, because 20 years ago, the blind community was using typewriters, so it was all paper, and it took forever to write stuff out. Probably about 20 minutes to write a whole page of, you know, if you were to write stats or a script or whatever for one whole show. And there was labels. You could do labels, but they didn't stick onto things.
Yeah.
And they were easy to come off. So it was, and they didn't have, computers were just coming out with screen readers, and the screen readers were not good. They were decent, but they couldn't read everything on the screen.
Yeah. Alec, we'll get you out of here on this. Alec Wolf, our intern, he's been here with us all semester long, about 4 months. It's his last day today. For someone who is blind, for someone who has a, you know, an impairment of any kind, what would your advice be about trying to go after something that seems really daunting?
I think just, first of all, I would assess yourself. And what I mean by that is, think to yourself, is this possible? And I don't mean that as a bad thing. What I the reason why I'm saying that is because I did that when I first went into this business. Look at this as a new experience. Look at everything in life as a new experience, because if you look at it that way, you're going to get somewhere. And not only to assess yourself, but try new things every time they come up. Because if you just keep saying no to different opportunities, then that's not only are you shutting yourself up, but you're shutting other people out to show you what life is really like. And always try your best in everything that you do, because that's all you can ask for, is the very best that you can give, especially in this business.
Alec, we appreciate all the work all semester. We appreciate you being with us, and we appreciate you being an inspiration to everybody in the building, and we appreciate you being an inspiration to everybody listening right now.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. It's been an honor, and it's been an awesome experience.
It's been awesome for us, too, and it's been awesome for everyone in the building. And he's blushing now in the corner, but I got to tell him that yeah, it's been inspirational for us in here. And Amanda, who's on Star 92.9, our sister station, she came by today, and they actually both went to BFA St. Albans. So she so Amanda came over and talked to us, and you could tell she was really kind of transfixed on what you were doing, and you speak the lingo better than we speak the lingo, because you're so far technologically advanced. It's impressive. If you have a thought on that interview, 802-655-6672. But Alec, appreciate you letting me ask the questions and you telling us the story, because from the day you came in here and showed me everything that you have done, I said, this is a story that I want to tell the local community, and I appreciate you letting us do it. So again, 802-655-6672 if you want to get in on that. When we come back, we'll get into some thoughts I have on the Red Sox, Joe Kelly, and the NFL shows its inconsistency, and they do it again. We'll get to those Red Sox lineups against the Astros as well. That's next, Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
Go late. It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas again, Champlain Valley Game Night, back here in action on a Thursday, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, the app, and your Amazon Echo. And we continue to get good feedback on that. People saying, man, hey, I just got the Amazon Echo. Now I can listen to you guys. All I have to say is enable 101.3 ESPN. So if you want to get in, you can, 802-655-6672 on the Town Fair Tire text line. We'll get to the Red Sox lineups in about 6 minutes from now. They take on the Astros. We'll have that coverage for you at 7:25. And on the Red Sox, you know, I read a really interesting piece in The Athletic today on Joe Kelly. And Joe Kelly, who has dominated, I mean, 24, his last 24 outings, he's allowed one run, only 10 hits. He has been unbelievable. And this is the guy who was a starter as recent as 2016. And when he was asked about what do you think the difference is, he says, I really fell, you know, essentially paraphrasing, I really fell into the reliever's mindset where you need a fastball that's really fast and one other pitch. And he said, that didn't work for me. My fastball's fast, but it wasn't fast enough. And my breaking ball, you know, it's okay, fine. My changeup, fine. But if they're going to sit on the fastball and I only have one other pitch to go to, then that's not what I'm going to be good at. He's brought back a slider. He's brought back his changeup. He's throwing all three of his pitches. And that deception and that, you know, that utilization of all of his repertoire is what has allowed him to be so good, and he's honing in himself on a big payday. Joe Kelly is going to be a free agent at the end of the year. And if the Red Sox have to let Craig Kimbrel go, and they want Joe Kelly to be their closer of the future, you're going to have to pay him now. He may not get the $90 million deal that Kimbrel probably seeks, but could he get a $40 million deal? Paying relievers is in. That is the in thing to do. As baseball changes, as the starter becomes devalued, and as the bullpen becomes more important, it is absolutely the it thing to pay relievers. 100%. That is the major it thing. Look at Brandon Morrow, who got paid. Look at Aroldis Chapman. Look at Andrew Miller's going to get paid in this offseason. He's a free agent at the end of the year. Kenley Jansen. Closer Brian Shaw, Wade Davis, they get paid, and they get paid now. as we have seen in the playoffs over the last few years from the Cubs, from the Indians, the bullpen game matters. And Joe Kelly, if he can establish himself as a closer, he's going to be in big money territory. If he establishes himself as a setup man, Brian Shaw got 4 years, $36 million. Nothing to sneeze at there. You'd be looking at a $30 million deal. Joe Kelly is a guy that some people wanted off the team just months ago. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. Rich wanted him off the team, by the way, as of opening day. The day after opening day, Rich wanted him off the team. I thought this was interesting, too. I'm not going to spend much time on this, but the New York Giants have a special teams player by the name of Michael Thomas. And he and a bunch of other players were included in the decision, you know, in the changing of the NFL kickoff rule, right? We talked about this a couple weeks ago. The NFL has changed the kickoff rule to try to make it safer. A bunch of players were in on that, as were Roger Goodell, 49ers owner Jed York, Ravens head coach John Harbaugh, Mike Tomlin, nine special teams coordinators were there. And my only thought is this. The NFL will go above and beyond to include players on these rule changes and how rule changes are implemented, but they won't even consult the players on the anthem policy. I don't understand that. And the realization that the president of the United States could essentially call the shots for the NFL owners, that's a scary proposition. Look, I understand sports and politics are mixed. Whether we like it or not, sports and politics are mixed, and we generally have liked it. Remember George Bush throwing out the first pitch at the 2001 World Series after 9/11? We loved that. Okay, we love sports being propaganda when it's the U.S. showing, quote, superiority over the Soviet Union in 1980 in hockey. We love when politics and sports become a sense of pride for us. We don't love when it becomes political propaganda in something that we may deem negative. And that's what this is. If you do not like President Trump, you have deemed this to be political propaganda. If you do like the president, then you have considered this is in the line with those other achievements, and this is a great thing. I don't like this. And it has nothing to do with my stance on the president. I just don't like this where it is clearly being used as a pawn for political gain. In the situation of the USSR and the Miracle on Ice, the country gained from that. If that was political propaganda, everybody won. When it was 9/11 and George Bush throwing out the first pitch, political propaganda, everybody won. Not everybody wins here. The Trump supporters win, the non-Trump supporters don't. And that's where it bothers me. That's where it bothers me. And the NFL made a concerted effort to bring in at least one owner, the commissioner, multiple head coaches, and nine special teams coordinators, in addition to players, to talk about the kickoff rule. They bring in none to even get an opinion and act like they care on the anthem policy. 802-655-6672. Big Mike at McGillicuddy's gets in with a total out of left field one. He says, I wonder how much this Twitter mess would deter LeBron from going to the Sixers. As a GM, Colangelo can't be that foolish. Really? Can he? Great job as always. Well, Mike, I think that he can. I don't know that Jerry Colangelo did this with the burner accounts, but the evidence is looking incriminating. And I saw another article today that I read part of that said it looked like his wife might have even been in on the action as well. This is not a good thing. I don't think that this deters LeBron, because I think Jerry Colangelo loses his job out of this, and I think LeBron has shown he's willing to work in some kind of turmoil front offices. You know, he doesn't like Dan Gilbert all that much. At least he didn't at one point. For the sake of working with good young players, and they have those in spades in Philly, from Embiid to Simmons to Fultz. They've got those guys, Cesarich. So I don't think this will matter. I don't think Colangelo's there, and if he was there, LeBron will sign a one-year deal like he's been doing for the last several years. Champlain Valley Game Night right here. Let's get to those Red Sox lineups. Red Sox baseball, Red Sox Astros, pair of first-place teams. Sox 39-17. Astros, the defending champs, the team that knocked the Sox out of the playoffs last year, 35 and 22. Pregame show is 7:25. The pitching matchup, Drew Pomeranz, 1-2 with a 6.75 ERA. Lance McCullers is 6-3 with a 3.98. I'm telling you right now, this game's going to be frustrating to watch. Both of these guys throw a lot of curveballs, and they stick with it. Pomeranz lasted 3 1/3 his last time out. Andrew Benintendi leads off in left. That means Mookie Betts isn't playing again today. Xander Bogaerts is at short. Mitch Moreland's at first. J.D. Martinez is the DH. Dustin Pedroia is at second. Rafael Devers at third. Brock Holtz in right. Sandy Leone is the catcher, and Jackie Bradley Jr. is in center. For the Astros, George Springer's in right. Alex Bregman's at third. Jose Altuve is the DH. Carlos Correa at short. J.D. Martinez is at first. Marwin Gonzalez at second. Tim Fedorovich is the catcher. Tony Kemp is in left. And Jake Marisnik, he is in center. All right, that will do it for us for the last time. Intern Alec, it's been great having you here. Thanks to intern Lance. Thanks to intern Kevin. I can only imagine what's going to happen tomorrow in my absence. I am off to New York. Bachelor party weekend is about to commence. I'll have some stories for you on Monday. Enjoy the game, everybody. The Huddle back tomorrow. CBGN and me, I'm back on Monday. It's 101.3 ESPN.